The only way that this nation or any nation is ever going to turn toward the Lord is if the light does shine, as if the light of the gospel is proclaimed and it's lived out in the lives of every believer who calls on the name of Christ. That's how the light's going to be shined, and that's how nations are going to change. And that's the reason why I have been doing these three messages on Freemasonry. You say, couldn't you have just done this in 1 week and been done with it? No. The reason is because it's so secret that nobody knows what goes on in there except for those who are in there. And it's so complex that you couldn't do justice to it. The first part of it was necessary in order to understand that initiation process and how right from the beginning it's a contradiction to Christianity, a contradiction to a commitment to Christ. The initiation of this process of seeking for the true light when we, as Christians, have the true light living within us in the person of Jesus Christ. And then last week we looked at in the teachings and the beliefs of the Masonic Lodge, it's an absolute compromise of Christianity. Everything that as Christians we hold as true has been either destroyed or watered down or completely compromised by the teachings of the Masonic Lodge. And the one that is part of it not only takes on these beliefs and begins to eventually be eroded in their own beliefs, but if they're a Christian, they bring that thinking back into the church and begin to infect the rest of the body and all of the workings of the church. And I believe that that's one of the reasons why our church has changed so rapidly to liberalism, to a moving away from holding the truth of Scripture as inerrant, as infallible, and as totally authoritative in our lives. I believe that this lodge had an important part in affecting that change in our churches, and a certain amount of the blame can be laid there at their doorstep. And at the rise in New Age, in a seeking after light, and all of this psychic, and all these different things that are going on today, and all this teaching that just seems to be consuming our nation and world, part of the blame for that can be laid at the doorstep of the Masonic Lodge because of this initiation into a seeking after the true light. John chapter 8, verses 31 to 36, and ask this question. Why are the blood oaths that we talked about the first week, why are the blood oaths so important to Freemasonry? John chapter 8, beginning with verse 31. And then Jesus said to those Jews who believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, we have been Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free? And Jesus answered them, most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. Why are the blood oaths so important to Freemasonry? Well, very simply, there is something that must be hidden. There's something that must be hidden at all costs. There's something deep within Freemasonry that cannot be allowed to see the light of day. And that's why the blood oaths are so important. The endless search for light is a contradiction of Christianity. The immoral beliefs are a compromise of Christianity. But there is a foundational reason for secrecy. And let me tell you what it is. Freemasonry is really a revived pagan religion. And it's been allowed to thrive in the world without check, without scrutiny, for the most part, since 1717. And you say, pagan religion? What do you mean, Pastor? Well, let me just tell you about a legend. And I want to make a statement at this point. In order to bring out this part, which is absolutely crucial, and this is the reason why Freemasonry continues, because this part of it is never brought out to the light of day. And in order to bring it out, I have to draw some very graphic pictures. And a couple of them, while I do it discreetly, are vulgar pictures. But unless this is brought out, you can never see the foundational problem with this organization. And that's part of the reason why they're able to maintain it. So I'm going to have to draw a few graphic pictures. There's a legend that goes something like this. Osiris, who is the god and king of Egypt, in all of his glory, he decided to go about on a journey and bless all of the neighboring nations around him with his knowledge of the arts and all of his understanding of the sciences of the day, all of his wisdom he decided to go and just bless the nations with. His brother, who was a jealous brother and jealous of Osiris and everything that he had, his brother Typhon, who was also the god of winter, wanted Osiris's kingdom and decided and plotted to murder him. And he carried it out. And he murdered his brother Osiris. Isis, now you remember that name, Isis, from the TV series Wonder Woman, for one. This is the basis of much of our Saturday morning television programming that we're letting our children watch, is this what I'm talking about today. Isis, his wife, and also the queen of Egypt, and also Egypt's moon goddess, went out when she learned that Osiris had been murdered. She went searching for the body, and she eventually found it by an acacia tree. Returning home, she buried the body of Osiris quickly, and then she planned to have a proper burial as soon as she could arrange things. In the meantime, Typhon, the jealous brother who had murdered Osiris, he didn't want to have any of that, and so he stole the body again. And when he stole the body, he cut it into 14 pieces, and he sent those 14 pieces to different places and hid them. Isis, after learning this, went searching for all of those pieces, and she found all of the pieces but one. The one that was missing, the one that was lost and was never found, was the phallus of Osiris. And so what Isis did was she crafted and shaped a substitute phallus, consecrated it as an object of worship, and it became a sacred part of their worship and their religion. The sacred phallus became an object of worship. If you don't know what a phallus is, I will at a certain point let you know. John chapter 8 and verse 32 says, "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And the truth is this: the legend of Hiram Abiff, remember from the first week, the legend of Hiram Abiff, the master mason who was killed and was raised by Solomon in his power, that legend is just a Masonic version of the pagan account of Osiris and Isis. And you say, well, you're saying that, but that doesn't mean that it's true. Well, let me tell you a couple of quotes from the Masonic writings themselves. The main two I mentioned to you are Albert Mackey and Albert Pike, two Alberts, who wrote most of the writings on the teachings and the understanding of Freemasonry. I did tell you something which I need to correct. On the first week, I told you that the founder of the Ku Klux Klan was one of those two writers. And I said it was Albert Mackey. I went back and I checked. I was wrong. It's Albert Pike. Albert Pike, the founder of the Ku Klux Klan, the major writer of the teachings of the Freemasonry and the Masonic Lodge, which tells you why, for example, as I said, the Ku Klux Klan was designed for racism. That's its only purpose of existence. It was designed for racism. The Masonic Lodge is racist today because of that influence of Albert Pike. The Mormon Church is a racist organization because Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon Church, was also a Mason. There is some proof that Charles Taze Russell was also a Mason. And you say, who is Charles Taze Russell? Charles Taze Russell was the founder of the Jehovah Witnesses. He was also a Mason. As you look at that organization, you'll see how some of these things and some of these teachings. Well, from the Masonic writings, from the writings of Albert Pike, he says this: we readily in Masonry recognize Hiram Abiff as Osiris of the Egyptians. And in another place, he says that Osiris and the Tyrian architect, Hiram Abiff, are one and the same. And that's a quote. Hiram Abiff of Freemasonry actually represents the sun god Osiris. And every master mason, every mason that goes in and goes through the first three degrees impersonates this pagan resurrection. The reason for secrecy is clear then, isn't it? Because of the truth of what's at the foundation of Masonry. The Masonic Lodge could never survive the scrutiny of truth. And their own writers knew this. Listen to a quote of Albert Mackey. "The secrecy of this institution, Masonry, is another and most important landmark. If divested of its secret character, it would lose its identity and cease to be Freemasonry. As an open society, it would not last as many years." Well, that's pretty obvious to me, and I'm sure it may be becoming obvious to you, that as an open society, it could not last. It would never survive because it would be seen for the pagan, compromised, evil, satanic organization that it is. It would be exposed as the satanic occult that it really is. Therefore, and listen carefully to this. Because of the need for secrecy, deception is seen as appropriate and acceptable within Freemasonry. From the other primary writer, Albert Pike, listen to this. The blue degrees, which is the Master Mason, the first three degrees, the blue degrees, quote, "are but the court or the portico of the temple of Masonry. Parts of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations." That means that the things that they learn when they first go in aren't really what those things mean. They're false in order to mislead them intentionally. "It is not intended," Albert Pike says, "that the Master Mason shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine that he understands them." Their true explication or understanding is reserved for the adepts, the princes of masonry, those of the higher degrees. And that's on page 819 of his Morals and Dogma of Freemasonry. So the master masons, those ones, your loved ones and my loved ones, who go into the masons, and those master masons, those further degrees, they are deliberately deceived. And why are they deliberately deceived? Because of the repulsive meaning of the truth of Freemasonry. Freemasonry has a foundation that is a condemnation of Christianity. Mystery religions, the mystery religions of Babylon, the mystery religions of Egypt, the mystery religions of Persia and Rome and Greece, all of them had two levels of meanings. There was one that was for the ignorant masses, the people that just didn't have all the learning. They were told that these images, these symbols, have one meaning. They can understand, but... And then there's a second level of meaning for those who are the elite. And this is what Albert Pike is telling us. He's saying, for those at the lower levels, even within Freemasonry, they've chosen to come in from darkness into the light, but even in the light, we're going to deceive them. We're going to give them a meaning for their level. But as they move through the ranks, they can learn the true meanings. Mystery religions were basically nature worship. Does that sound familiar today? All of this save the earth, save the green, save all this stuff, all that stuff is nothing more than nature worship. And you'll see who's much involved in all of that. It's everybody involved in the New Age movement who are the ones that are driving this whole ecological form of worship. And this nature worship basically has one form which kind of spreads out in other things. The sun, as the source and giver of life to the earth, is what's worshiped. Its rays, its sun rays, penetrate the earth and give new growth. And so the sun is worshiped because of its power to bring life, its power to penetrate the earth and bring forth, its power, to use another word to begin a picture here, its power by its rays to impregnate the earth and bring forth life. This worship has always, since the beginning, it's referenced in the Bible, in the Old Testament. You heard of the Asherah poles and these different things there at different times in the history of Israel. Those were phallic symbols, all part of this same worship. The worship has been essentially sexual from the beginning. Let me give you a warning again. This next part is going to be discreet, but it's going to be specific enough for you to understand. The key element of this pagan worship is the male phallus, which is worshipped as a representation of the sun's rays, which impregnate the earth. This is vulgar, it's unpleasant, I know, but it is a reality, and it's very important to shine a light on Freemasonry. With that idea of the sun with its rays penetrating and impregnating the earth to bring life, let's look at a couple of the Masonic symbols. The deception for those in the Blue Lodge, and then their real meaning for those higher up. The compass and the square with the G in the middle of it. You've all seen that either on the lodge or hanging on somebody's car, maybe a relative. You've seen the compass, the square. The deception is to remind the master masons to be square in all their dealings with all men and to circumscribe their passions or keep them under control. The truth of that symbol of the square and the compass, when you move into the higher levels, is that the square represents the female, the earth. And the compass represents the male, the sun. And the arrangement of the symbols of the compass over the square depicts the sun impregnating the earth. That's what's taught in Freemasonry at the higher levels. A second symbol is the letter G that's right in the middle of all that. The deception there to the Master Masons is that it represents God. But a little further on, it represents simply deity. And a little later on, it represents geometry. The truth is, when you get to the higher levels, is that the G represents the male reproductive organ, the phallus, the object of worship of all the mystery religions, all of those based in Osiris and Isis. And phallic idols were used for worship, and I just mentioned they were in the Bible. They're all over the place. That's why God condemned Israel, because when a king came in, they would worship God, and then they would also leave all of these idols standing around in the land. And if you understand the meaning of all this, you understand why God saw it as such an abomination and as a prostitution away from, and an adultery away from him as their God. A third symbol is the point within a circle. The deception that's told to the Master Mason is that he is the point, and that he's contained and restricted by the boundary of his duty as a Mason. The truth is that the point represents the male, and the circle represents the female, and the point within the circle represents sexual union. The fourth symbol is the yod. When you're into the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, moving on to the 32nd degree to become a Shriner, you're given a ring, and on that ring is a yod. And the truth of that yod is that it represents deity in general to those that don't understand, and that, again, the phallus in particular. That G, they're told when they reach that level and they have that ring, they're told that the G is actually a corruption of that yod. Albert Pike, at this point, with that ring, with that symbol, he ties Freemasonry to witchcraft. He says the mysterious yod of the Kabbalah is the image of the Kabbalistic phallus. And the Kabbalah, I don't know how to pronounce that word, is actually a medieval occult book used in witchcraft. Another symbol is the two vertical lines. The deception is that these are said that they represent the holy saints John, John the Baptist and John the Apostle. The truth is that those two lines represent the summer and the winter solstices, which is the shortest and the longest day of the year, which, and we learned on those sheets that I handed out at Halloween, those are very important in pagan and occultic worship, those 2 days, shortest night and the longest night, the summer and winter solstices. The sixth symbol in the lodge, which is the last one I want to talk about, is the Bible itself. The deception is this, that it represents truth and that all Masonic rituals are based on the Bible. That's the deception that's told to the Master Mason. So he thinks that he can be a Christian and be a Mason at the same time. But the truth is, from their own writings, that the Bible is only one of the three great lights, along with the square and the compass. The Bible can and should be replaced with a Quran, a book of the law for the Jew, the Hindu scriptures, or any other holy book, whatever it is, depending on the preference of the men in the lodge. And the Masonic writings read this, and here's the revelation of what they really think about the Bible, not what they tell you they think. This is a quote from Masonic writings. Masonry has nothing whatever, this is a quote, to do with the Bible. It is not founded on the Bible. For if it were, it would not be Masonry. It would be something else. Yeah, it'd be Christianity is what it would be. And here's the clincher, and this is critical. The Kabbalah, then that seems to be the actual source book of Masonry. And the Bible is merely a piece of furniture in the lodge. Now, let me give you two other symbols to consider. One of them is the dollar bill, and the other one is the street plan of Washington, D.C. If you have a dollar bill, on the back of the dollar bill is two circles on the left and right-hand side of the one, the word one. On the right-hand side, there's an eagle, which represents who we are and everything. On the left-hand side, there's a curious little picture, which when you look at it, doesn't make any sense. It has an eye within a triangle, which looks like the top of that pyramid. There's a pyramid, and that eye is referred to as the all-seeing eye. The deception, which is told to the Mason, at the Master Mason level in the Blue Lodge, the deception is that all-seeing eye represents God and his omniscience, and that he can see everything. Well, certainly you could look at it that way, but that's not what the Masons mean. That's the deception at the lower level. The higher level, you'll understand that the all-seeing eye, the top of the pyramid, actually is a representation of the sun god Osiris. If you go into any tomb or any of the pyramids, you'll see that's the way that the sun god is always depicted, is with the all-seeing eye. The pyramid, of course, the pyramid had only one purpose. It was a tomb, but it was a tomb that was dedicated to the sun god Osiris. That's what the pyramids were for. That's why they were built. They were built as worship items, as idols. The all-seeing eye is not what we've been told that it is. It's actually a depiction of the sun god. At the bottom, there's an interesting, curious little thing there. It has the words, and I have a hard time reading them. It says, Novus Ordo Seclorum. Tex Mars, in one of his exposés of Freemasonry, he produced a document, which is an interesting document, from September of 1950, a copy of the 33rd Degree magazine, The New Age, the one I mentioned. There's actually in there a exposé of the plan of a New World Order. You've heard President Bush and Reagan and some others talk about a New World Order. You've heard talk of a one world government. Well, this is the plan of Freemasonry. And it's openly written in that document from 1950, from September 1950, which Tex Mar has reproduced in his newsletter verbatim. In there are these words, Novus Ordo Seclorum, which if you know Latin, which I took Latin for 5 years when I was in boarding school, it literally means a new order of the world. You want to talk about conspiracies, the plot of a new world order, of one world government, of one under a few, is right there, and we carry it around in our pocket. We carry around pagan worship of the sun god in our pocket. Let me mess you up a little more. And guess, by the way, guess who put that on there? You know who put that symbol on there? Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You know who Franklin Delano Roosevelt was, besides being our president? He was a 33rd degree Mason. He was deceived, just like our loved ones who are in Masonry. And you know this new age, this new Aryan age, this new world order, interestingly enough, is exactly the same concept and idea that was promoted during the Third Reich. You know what the Third Reich was? Hitler's regime in Germany that was taken down by World War II. He talked of a new world order, an Aryan race of a perfect people. Interestingly, we destroyed that Reich, we think, but we carry around the remnant of it on our dollar bill. Let me mess up your day a little more. Washington, D.C. street map. Somebody told me a couple of years ago that in the actual layout of the street plan of the city of Washington, D.C., the Masonic symbol is actually there in the plans. And I said, oh, okay, and I didn't pay that much attention then. But as I started to do study for these messages, I went back and I said, I remember that, and I went back and I checked it out. And you know, because I was looking for it and I knew what I was looking for, it like jumped right off the map at me. Let me tell you about it. Imagine for yourself, you just got in the bus and went down to the mall area of the Washington, D.C. At one end of the mall is the Lincoln Memorial, and then there's the reflecting pool, and then there's the Washington Monument, and then there's more of the mall, and then there's the Capitol. Well, if you look at a map, and I've shown a couple of people here in the church who've asked me about this, and they can see the exact same thing. It's so clear, it's ridiculous. The road that goes around the Capitol is the top of the compass. Pennsylvania Avenue that goes all the way down to the White House is one side of the compass. Maryland Avenue, which goes the other way, is the other side of the compass. They say, okay, well, where's the square? If you go to the Lincoln Memorial, there are two streets. One that's called Henry Bacon Drive, and another one is called Daniel French Drive. And those two go off. If you continue to draw an imaginary line past, across over all the streets, they make a perfect square intersecting the two points of the compass, proportionally where it's supposed to be, according to the symbol. Then you say, wait a minute, okay, in order for it to be the symbol, you need to have the G. And where is there a G carved in the plans of Washington, D.C.? Well, you need to understand the pagan religion a little bit. The G represents what? A phallic symbol. And I tried to discreetly let you know what that was. An obelisk was one of the main phallic symbols of the Egyptian sun god worship. And if you don't know what an obelisk is, it's a tall square tower that's shaped like a pyramid at the top. Does that draw any pictures in your mind? The Washington Monument is an obelisk. If you look at the map, it stands exactly where the G is in the Masonic symbol. We have another one in Central Park in New York City, one of two that used to stand in front of the pyramid to the sun god in Egypt, in Alexandria. They're called Cleopatra's Needles. Have you ever heard of that in history? One of them was transported from there to London and sits on the bank of the Thames River. The other one stands in Central Park in New York City. It's one of those two obelisks which have been referred to as Cleopatra's Needles. They both stood at one time before the Temple of the Sun. I could go on and on and on. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say this. The Masonic Lodge is a satanic occult, and it's holding some of our loved ones in its deceptive grip. What lesson do we need to learn from Freemasonry? Well, I have a book at home called the Eagle Story. Some of you may have seen the Eagle Story, read the Eagle Story, but it tells about how an eagle was captured and how eagles are captured. Eagles are captured by deception, by cunning, by deceit. An eagle always makes its home at a high spot where it can be safe and it can overlook its domain. But it has to eat, and so it goes down, and eagles like to fish. And so they go down into a river, and they'll pull fish out of the river. And then they go back to their perch at that high spot. The eagle story tells about how this trapper trying to catch an eagle, how he went about it. Knowing that the eagle has to work to get the fish, he on the first day went and took a couple of fish and threw them on the shore. All the eagle had to do was pick them off the shore. So the eagle went, and he was kind of curious about this change in his environment. And he looked down there, and he saw the fish on the shore, and he thought that was strange, and he stood a ways off and looked for hours, wouldn't touch him, but then realized, well, it does. I guess nature is providing for me in some strange new way. I don't have to work so hard. And it went and it took one and ate him, and it ate them all. And the trapper, day after day, kept placing fish there, and the eagle never fished again, but just came and picked them off of the shore. And people get into the Masonry because of a desire for connections and all of the opportunities that it's going to open up and the ways that you're going to be able to get what you want easier in simpler ways. After a few days, and that eagle got used to getting this food this way and never bothered doing it the other way anymore, he then took the fish, the trapper, and placed them on a rock. And the eagle saw this change and scrutinized it for a while, but then didn't care, was interested in the food, and began to go and stand on the rock and eat it. And after a few days, the trapper came and made his trap, a net on a pole, place it in the ground and put it over that rock. And the eagle came and he stopped and he went and he stood on top of the net. And after a while, I guess he figured, this thing can't hurt me. In fact, I'm standing on top of it. And eventually went underneath that net and started to eat the fish. And after a few days, when the eagle got used to the net and just went under there and ate its fish, then the day came when the trapper decided to spring the trap. The eagle was in there, the trapper was hidden, and the eagle was so dull in his sensitivity to sin at this point that he went and he stood on that rock and ate, and the trapper pulled down the trap. And though the eagle tried to flap his wings and leave, he couldn't. He was trapped. And Satan has been trapping men this way ever since the fall. He uses the lust of the flesh, other people, and things that we want from other people. He uses the lust of the eyes, those positions and places and those possessions and things that we want in life. And he uses the pride of life, the recognition and everything. And he's been trapping men for centuries. And you see, sin is always just one choice away. God's word says in verse 36, if the Son makes you free, you're free indeed. There's two kinds of freedom. Freedom that comes by receiving the living word, Jesus Christ, and then freedom that comes from receiving the written word and gaining an understanding of who God is. And those two freedoms, first of all, Jesus Christ provides freedom from the bondage of sin. Look at verses 33, 36. They answered, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say we'll be made free? And Jesus answered them, most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin, and a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you're free indeed. Satan can never take away our salvation. Once we've accepted Jesus Christ as our Savior, Satan can never take away our salvation. It was purchased by the blood of Christ, purchased by the blood of the Son. It was given by the love of the Father, and it's sealed by the promise of the Holy Spirit. That's the essence of eternal security. Secondly, Jesus Christ provides freedom from the error of Satan. Look at verses 31 and 32. Then Jesus said to those Jews who believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Satan can deceive us from living a fulfilled life by trapping us into compromise, by luring us into sin, by tempting us with worldly temporal values. We call this the backslidden believer. You can be free from the slavery to sin and still remain in the trap of error. And that's the sad part of our loved ones in Freemasonry. You see, if Satan can't destroy your eternity, then he'll work to make you a spiritual eunuch until you go into eternity. And how many people do you know who claim the name of Christ, who walked with him and now don't walk with him anymore, who walk serving the world, serving themselves, and are enslaved to the deception of Satan? If you don't know Jesus Christ as your Savior and Lord, what is it that's keeping you from being saved? What is it that's standing in the way? Your pride? And if you are a Christian, what is Satan using to keep you from being unfruitful for his work?